I'm a big proponent, as you know, of Intergame. It's 90% of what it takes to succeed. Business is not that complicated, but it's the Intergame piece, the identity, the belief structures that create the blinders to where you're getting in your own way and the challenges to growth.
Welcome to the Unstoppable Woman podcast, where we explore what it means to create a truly exquisite life. I'm your host, Amira Alvarez, inviting you to be part of these intimate conversations about feminine ambition, what lies beyond traditional notions of success, and how to answer the question, what's next when you've already achieved so much? Let's dive in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unstoppable Woman podcast. I am super excited to bring to the show today an amazing woman. Her name is Lauren Goldstein. She is the business doctor. So if you're someone who is feeling the struggle around your service-based business, Lauren is an asset for you. So I was on Lauren's podcast. We don't know if it's already been released or it's yet to be released because I'm recording this in advance, as did she. So we don't know the timing on all of that, but I had a rollicking good time with her and had a really good time being the interviewee. So decided to have her on this podcast as well and do a little reverse interview here. So welcome to the podcast, Lauren. So good to have you here.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. So thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Okay. So let's, as context, give the audience a little bit about your business journey. So you didn't just get birthed into 2023 doing this work. What happened to lead you to this place?
I've actually been doing this for 12 years. And I've had a very unorthodox way that I got here. So to try and keep it as short as possible. In my former life, I was in the medical field. I worked in pediatric neurology and epilepsy research, was going to be a doctor. I don't know if I have any fellow OCDers out there that like to plan. I had my whole life planned. And then we had a little baby come in to the epilepsy monitoring unit that we treated. And then the insurance company came back and said, actually, we're not going to pay for this continued treatment. And I just had this moment of supreme clarity where I realized that as much as I was put on this earth to help people, I couldn't do it with one hand tied behind my back and not be able to do what was best for my patients because insurance companies really are dictating patient care. So I left. I left research. I left the medical field. And I felt like a cork in an ocean. I was really lost. I didn't do what you're supposed to do during college and explore all of the things. I was very one-track mind. I remember at breakfast one morning with my mentor, you know, I was sniffling into my grits and I said, I don't know if I'm ever going to figure out what I'm meant to be or do now that I left. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot and I think you should be a business consultant. And I laughed at him because, guys, this is 12 years ago. So I don't know if you know what building a quote unquote online business was like back then, but it was no walk in the park. Like, we did not have Stripe. Like, websites were very hard to build. We had to do wire transfers or check. Like, it was the Wild West. Anyway, so I'm like, Jean, what are you? Are you nuts? Like, I specialized in tiny humans for a very long time. I have no, like, why would I be a good business consultant? Because also, if you were a business consultant, you worked for the big four, PricewaterhouseCooper, McKinsey, etc. He said, listen, every business can benefit from having an unbiased third party come in and help you see what you can't see because you're too close. You can't read the label when you're in the bottle. And so he said, the way that you diagnosed things in the medical field is very valid to how you can diagnose things in the business world. So even though I thought he was crazy and my worthiness imposter syndrome was screaming very loud, I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And there was a lot of failing forward. And then I really got good at helping business owners uncover these things. And I went from being a mile wide and an inch deep in my services to, you know, a mile deep and an inch wide. And about 6 years ago, one of my clients, after a diagnostic, he goes, okay, that was brutal. It's much worse than I thought, which I said, but let's also celebrate what's working really well. He said, but really, no, that was like, You put my business in an MRI machine and you said, oh, there's the cancer. Let's go treat it. And then he's like, you're kind of like the biz doc. And it stuck. And now, you know, I get so much fulfillment and joy out of helping business owners get unstuck and unburied and out from underneath their business so they can make a bigger impact and have more fun, take a vacation, you know, have that true entrepreneurial freedom that they're looking for.
I love that. I love that. So that came full circle, right? The being a doctor, being in the actual medical world to the name of your business now, mm-hmm. and what you do and that skill set, that transferable skill set, which I think is really, really powerful. So let's break this down just a little bit more, because there's a gap there between mentors saying, go try this, I think you'd be really good at it, and you being successful at it. And I think whether you're starting a new business, which is not necessarily our audience on this podcast, but there's some people listening who are, you know, contemplating making a shift into to starting their own business, or you're running your own business, or you're running your own team right now in an organization, and you're leaning into something just radically new and different for you. This is not something that maybe it feels like you have a transferable skill, but you're like, haven't tested this out yet. Haven't proven it to myself. What's that messy middle look like? What are some things that you did now that maybe while you were in it weren't so much fun, but looking back, you're like, yeah, that changed everything for me. That was a really pivotal part of my journey.
The three things that allowed me to get through it were, first, having an insatiable appetite for growth. And I don't like getting messy. I'm a recovering perfectionist, but allowing it to be messy until you figure it out. So I'm still perfecting getting messy and letting it be messy. But that was number one, just everyday thing. How can I be better than yesterday? The second was I surrounded myself with very smart people who had done it before. I think it's very important to have around you people that have built the businesses, the relationships, the lives that you want, so that you can lean on them to help impart wisdom on you that will help you avoid certain potholes. And then the third thing, I had my own coaches and mentors that I worked with one-on-one, and I'm a big proponent of therapy because I joke that entrepreneurship is personal development with a paycheck, and it will make all of your demons, all of your trauma or whatever you stuff down, it will come back with a vengeance to be cleared out. And so it's really important to have what I would call a self-care team to work on your inner game as much as your outer game.
I'm a big proponent, as you know, of inner game. Like it's 90% of what it takes to succeed. Business is not that complicated, but it's the inner game piece, the identity, the belief structures that create the blinders to where you're getting in your own way and the challenges to growth. So,
exactly. Yeah.
Hey there. I just want to take a quick moment and ask, what's the thing holding you back from your own success? The hidden shadow or saboteur potentially at play for you? And do you know how to find it? We often have that one thing keeping us from our next level. And it's not always the strategic move. It's often the internal one. I found in my own journey of success in building my exquisite life, it's what I call a core wound or loyalty pack. What's that? I share more at theunstoppablewoman.com, right on the homepage. Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now, let's get back to our episode. And every day, better your best. Like some days, man, it does not feel like you want to do that. You just want to crawl into a little hidey hole and say, I want to do over. I don't want to better my best. I want to just hide away. So, okay.
Yep.
So let's talk about the team, the support team to create, because that's an important piece in how you think having that outside lens helped you. Why don't we do this in conversation of like a specific obstacle that you were overcoming in the journey, right? It all seems so easy now. Like the things that you had to overcome initially are things that you take for granted right now, but there were some big things in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things did you have to overcome, and how did your support team really support you in that?
Three, maybe four things that I really had to learn how to overcome were, I don't love being told no. And so getting discouraged by the no was really something very real for me in the beginning. But I had
specifically around sales, when you would put a proposal out or make a sales conversation.
Okay. Or somebody Good would one. Choose someone beside me, and then it'd make me question my value. And so I really had to shift from just looking at the no as feedback about me to recognizing that, sure, sometimes my sales process could have been a little more strong, but also that I don't know how much that no protected me from. And when I actually look back with hindsight, almost every single person that said no to me, or I actually started saying no to people later in my business, they weren't fully aligned clients. And so, sure, would it have been money in the bank? 100%. But that outbound cost, whether it was to mentally, physically, emotionally taking away from my other clients, I don't know what that would have been. So really appreciating that no.
Let's pause there for 1 second, because I think this is such an important piece. This is so important. And we, you know, you're working as like a small team, a solo entrepreneur at the time, at least, versus, you know, maybe a no for your company that's a multi-million dollar company, right?
Right.
The no. How do you, like, in the moment, you have to lean into the trust and the faith, like, okay, this is happening for me, not to me. Mm-hmm. But then I think what's a really interesting question, Lauren, is how do you know with absolute certainty that that person was an opportunity cost that was not worth it? Not a value statement. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, we're not saying people are bad people, but like, that was not a good use of my time or energy. How do you know that after? Because I have a spidey sense to that as well. And I'd be interested to know, like, how do you know? Oh, yeah, that wasn't the one that got away. That was a good no.
When I get a yes, because my close rate is actually very, very high for people who are my ideal clients. So, you know, seven-figure service-based entrepreneurs who are ready to get out from underneath their business, who are coachable, etc. I have an absurd close rate for those. But in every situation where there was a no, even in those early years where I was doing more in the trenches operational work, upon reflection, one or two things always occurred that got me out of sorts. One, they bucked my process. And so I was trying to like change my process to fit them. And then they ended up saying no, which is good, because one of my favorite quotes is unshared expectations are nothing more than premeditated resentments. And so because I really try and do a post-mortem once a month of like, who said yes, who said no, why did they say yes or no? It was always that they were trying to buck the system before we even got started. And, you know, if you are in a business like mine, we have a proven process. We have a proven system. Yes, there's flexibility there. But if you're already trying to like change the system to start, you're probably not going to be the most coachable and curious client, which then creates different conflicts. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, upon reflection, I really looked at how I was willing to bend my criteria to fit them, instead of saying, this is actually who we work with. And we work with those people, not because I couldn't work with more people, but because statistically speaking, you're going to see the most amount of success when you have these things going on in your business. And so for me, it was about really getting the clarity on and trusting that the process I have works and it gets really great results. And when I try to bend it, change it, shift it, whatever, to fit another person, instead of saying, like, when you're ready, come work with me, then it almost always becomes that opportunity cost.
So good. That's a really interesting data point, the bucking the system. So how do you deal with that? Entrepreneurs that probably need your help are entrepreneurs that don't like to be told what to do, right? Like, what's the nuance on that?
I joke that entrepreneurs and business owners want to know what to do, but they don't want to be told what to do, right? They want that clarity. But at the end of the day, if we get told what to do, then we're almost like that little like kid that's like, don't tell me what to do. So the way that I approach that is, again, coming back to clarity and really understanding what kind of business they want, what kind of life they want to build around their business. Then you'll very rarely, if ever, hear me say, this is the only thing you should do. I will most often give them two, max three options of, you know, like, let's say they're in our advisory program. We've done the first month of diagnostic, figured out the priorities. And I'll say, okay, so you've a gap in your team. Here are the two or three ways we can go about this. We can hire this person. We could shift this person around. We can hire this person in lieu of this person. And then I let them decide, because I think at the end of the day, I have to remember that this is a partnership and it's not my business, but I treat it like it's my business and I'm very invested. But at the end of the day, I want to empower them to become stronger leaders, trust their own choices, and also make good decisions, whether it turns out at the end of the day that it was a good decision or not. Like, make that decision with the information you have and then learn from it.
So shifting the conversation slightly, mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself an entrepreneur?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you consider yourself driven or ambitious?
Mm-hmm.
Would you self-describe that way?
I would. I might be one of those people that, like, until I'm convinced, whether personally convinced or externally convinced, might take a little time for me to get there, but once I'm there, I'm all in.
Do you have any, I'm going to use a very technical term, wonk or wobble with the word ambition?
This is going to sound a little woo, but for the first 6, maybe 7 years of my business, I was running at a million miles an hour, burning the candle at both ends, trying to get it up and running. And so in my masculine, that for me, ambition has a little charge to it, but it's more around, I got burned out and almost burned down my business because I was chasing something in perhaps maybe not the most effective way for me. And so I'm still ambitious. I still go after goals, but I've learned how to do it in a way that's supportive and not just fully just like gung-ho, balls to the walls sort of energy. It kind of felt like, I don't know, bulldozery, or just like, I'm just going to do whatever it takes, versus now being much more aware of, you know, launching and learning, having those conversations about how can I do this and create the masculine systems, but also be in the feminine flow of like receiving it and letting it come in. And, you know, I'll give you a really great example. This might not paint me in the greatest light, but, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. It used to be in my early years, I would get so upset if somebody had to reschedule something on my calendar, because I felt so disrespected because I had so little time because I was running so fast. And now I'm like, great. You know, now I have time to do a few other things. Maybe I might even go take a nap like I did last week when I was a little under the weather. But it's a different energy now where I'm still not great at it, but I've surrendered to the trust that if something was canceled, it's really for the best of everyone. And I can tell you that in a couple situations, it's actually very funny. Last week, for example, I wasn't feeling my best. And I said, gosh, you know, I was going back and forth about canceling all of my meetings one day because I just wasn't feeling well. And you know what happened?
They started
rescheduling. And I was like, holy crap, this is great. Like for me, it was just this, I had to shift from ambition looking a certain way to knowing that it's all really working out and I don't have to control it on such like a white knuckle grip. In fact, I think I did myself a lot of disservice, not to say that I would change anything, but I do think that my like high level of trying to control and just muscling through in those first years probably slowed a lot of my success.
Absolutely, 100%. I think this is such an interesting conversation to have around the concept of ambition, because I think so many women are ambitious in that very masculine drive, go hard kind of way, which I have a lot of that in me. You know, I have a huge amount of will and focus and discipline. And I can map that creative idea to like, okay, let's go, let's get it done. I got places to be, things to do, people to see, let's go, come on. Mm-hmm. And yet I think what happens is there is the risk of burnout. There is the risk of like wanting to throw the towel in because you aren't fed on the inside in the way that you can become fed if you allow the universe, other people to support you, to give to you. If you lean into that trust and faith side, which is like, if you talked to me about trust and faith, I would have been like, no, we got to get this. Like, we need to do this thing. Don't give me any of that. But there is this place that I think highly ambitious women who have huge amounts of competency. They can get it done. They're very strong in their masculine. They know how to make things happen. Start relying on that because that becomes security. That becomes certainty. Mm-hmm. They can that is a skill set that they know. And yet they also concurrently say, I want more time. I want more spaciousness. I want more ease. I want more flow. I want to be supported. I want the team. I want the relationship in the personal life. But none of the way that they're showing up is allowing for that. Mm-hmm. And yet that's the only way they know to date. So this is an identity issue, right? Like my identity says, this is how it needs to be. I am someone who does this and that is safe, right? That is known and safe. And then you start hearing, oh, there's this other way. Really? You can lean into allowing. You can lean into receiving. You can lean in into being open and the world provides for you. And you're like, I don't trust that. And there's a challenge there. You want it, but it's hard to trust. So how did you learn to trust that? Lean in and allow the world to support you in the ways that you wanted support.
To be honest, I'm still working on this every day. It is definitely something that I have yet to master. I'm getting better at it. I think the way that I did it was forced on me because I didn't get it. And I was just like, you know, I don't know if any of you have this thing where, you know, maybe you didn't have like the most calm and safe childhood. So you felt like you had to do the things, like you couldn't count on anyone else. So I've carried that with me for a lot of years.
I just need to underscore that for all the people listening, because generally speaking, the people that are very driven, very ambitious, actually do really well in this world are like, I'm going to control the blankety blank out of this and I'm going to make it happen. Like it comes from that place of, you know, trauma with a capital T or lowercase t when you were a child and you learned coping strategies that actually, talking about transferable skills like we did in the beginning, are transferable to business. And then you succeed in some ways, but it can also hold you back. So, okay.
I really, for so much of my life, been this little control freak, for lack of a better word. Because I knew that if I couldn't count on other things and I couldn't control other things, at least I could control me. And so it was 2018 and we were just crushing it. Best months, like everything was going great from the outside. On the inside, I was a disaster. I was burnt out. I was dropping balls, which is very unlike me. I was, you know, kind of at my wit's end. I remember on a Friday afternoon crying at my desk because I had just had it. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, my team's burned out. I'm burned out. I'm dropping balls for the clients. I don't like letting people down. And I closed my laptop And I went and I laid down and I slept like, I don't even know, like 24 hours, basically. Didn't talk to another living human being for all of Saturday. Just did a lot of purging. Woke up on Sunday and it was like the sun had come out. And I just, in that moment, I realized that what I had been doing of trying to control everything, power through, just muscle through, was no longer working. And
you diagnosed your own problem there, right?
I did. And it was in that moment that I had to make a decision, because I couldn't, what I was doing was not sustainable. So I had to trust that I could do what I needed to do and help the clients, but in a much different way. And so from there, I just started doing tiny little things to build that trust muscle, whether it was, you know, listening to my gut a little bit more and saying yes or no to a client. I did a lot of trust work around, I basically, on that Sunday, killed off every service we had except three. And like, even today, I can't remember, actually, there's a book that talks about this kind of experimenting with the universe. I can't remember what it's called at this moment, but it'll come to me. But I try every day to kind of say, what can I test today? What can I trust today? And I think you and I talked about this on my podcast, like the little incremental steps, because it's, again, something I work on every day. I'm still not, like, I didn't flip a switch and I'm totally trusting, like, la la la, like that's just probably never going to be me. But I do trust that everything is working out probably better than I could even plan. And so I kind of get a little bit excited to kind of see how it's going to work out better than I could imagine. And I'll actually give you a really great example. As we've described, I'm a little bit of an OCD planner, recovering perfectionist. However, this year I decided to go on a fall friend tour because I live in Texas. And so we have two seasons, summer and second summer. So I wanted to go to the East Coast and just like experience an East Coast fall. So I planned this trip, going to Nashville, New York, Boston, and New Hampshire. And I just, the number one thing on my list was to go apple picking. And so I'd planned to go apple picking with my friend in New York. And through a series of really interesting events, the weeks leading up to it, I just kept getting this gut feeling of don't plan your hotels yet, which is super nerve-wracking to me to not know where I'm staying. But I'm like, okay. So I'm in Nashville and I still haven't booked my hotel. So this is like Sunday and I arrive Monday. Sorry if this is giving anybody a trigger warning. Anyway, so then I remember that one of my friends is from New York. So I text her and I'm like, hey, where should I stay in New York? You know, I'm trying not to spend a gajillion dollars. I want to be in a good spot. And she said, wait a minute, you're going to be in New York? I'm going to be in New York. Why don't you stay at the same hotel we're staying at? And I'm like, huh, green flag number one. So it ends up that we both live in Austin, but we had been ships in the night. And all of a sudden we're meeting up in New York, which is very fun. Anyway, so then we end up at the same hotel. Have a great time. But then the friend that I was going to go apple picking with forgot to put me on her calendar, so she got booked. So then we couldn't go apple picking. And then it rained. And so there was like green flag number two. And so like through the course of this entire trip where I had the plan, like I knew where I wanted to go, but how I was going to get there, I kind of left open. It ended up being way more magical than I could have imagined, because my friend, I texted her and I was like, hey, I didn't get to go apple picking in New York. Any chance you want to go when I'm in New Hampshire? And she said, we were just talking about that.
Of course.
Right. And so her husband, who's a landscape architect, knows this guy who owns a farm. He's always wanted to check it out. We go there. He happens to be there. He gives us a whole tour. He's got like 75 different kinds of apples. Anyway, I know way more about apple orchards than I probably will ever need to know. But the point of that story is I can tell you unequivocally that had I just been so attached to how I wanted it to be and like had already picked out my hotels and made the plan, like I would have gone apple picking alone. It probably would have been raining. Like it just, it would not have been the magical experience that it was. And so I know that was a very long story, but I hope it can illustrate to you guys listening that, yes, you do need to have that vision, but like it's so much more fun when you allow the vision to unfold in different magical ways? Because I can tell you 1000%, even with how smart, structured, and all that stuff I am, I could never have planned how that apple picking went in New Hampshire.
Hey, Amira here. Want to know more about what keeps uber successful women from achieving everything they want in life? Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
The universe has, one of the things that I teach is like, it's an ordered universe. Like, order is heaven's first law. And when we get too involved in the coordination, we interfere with this greater order that there is. And yet, because of childhood trauma, because we have a certain amount of success when we plan and we organize, and we do need a goodly amount of that, we think that that is the way to the outcome, when in fact there is an opening to receiving, allowing the trust to come, the goodness to come in as we trust. And it's an interesting navigation or discernment question. There's a saying that I love, which is trust God, but tie up your camels. And like, when is the time to tie up your camels, right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't tie up your camels. Your camels are going to go wandering off. Someone's going to take your camels, whatever, right?
Yep.
Right. But when is the time exactly to tie up your camels? And this, I feel like we learn through experience, through the lived experience of walking the path at ever like larger, if you will, risk levels. Like, not having your hotel booked is a certain level of risk, but there are bigger risks that you will lean into now that you have this experience. So great story, Lauren.
Thank you.
So let's expand the conversation a little bit. Your business is great. You love what you do. You love the impact that you have, the work that you do with your clients. You're leaning into trusting the universe and letting go of a little bit of the control and and the self-defined perfectionism there. I'm often talking to women about the fullness of their life, like expanding the conversation beyond just the business enterprise, that, you know, the goals in your career and your entrepreneurship, to okay, now how does that fit in and map to a bigger vision for your entire life? And I call this the exquisite life, or your exquisite life plan. Like, what is it that you really want to expand your capacity for? So where do you think what's your edge on that right now? Where are you looking to grow in your life outside of the business?
So my edge right now is in relationships and calling in my future husband. Like, that's really my edge, because I think for so long my business was my safety net, because it was, you know, maybe uncomfortably comfortable, but it was a very known quantity. And so I also would use it as an escape of like, oh, I can't get together, I'm working, or I have a client deadline or something, when I would get nervous about being vulnerable or intimate in, you know, this new budding relationship. And so the edge that I'm really working on right now is, it's not enough just to have a business, like having that full life, and how do I build my business around that instead of trying to build my personal life around my business, but having that shift to create more space and flow. And you know, I recognize that my business is that vehicle to help me have, you know, I have this, I feel like this is a very elder millennial thing to say, but I have this vision of having, you know, a house with some land and some like horses and chickens, and like kind of going back to my childhood. I grew up, you know, in a very small town, just would run amok with the horses all the time. And I kind of want to get back to that, to this, the slow down, the disconnect, the intentional living and the intentional relationships, rather than the busy go, go, go energy of business.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, can I share a little tip on that?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. So my experience with calling in you know, not to be too woo, but the man of my dreams, right? Like ticking all the frickin' boxes, right? And really like, wow, at a much higher level than, you know, I had a vision for it, but like, wow, just came in. That's great. Is that I had to make space for it in my business, in my life. Like you may have heard the expression, like if you want a man in your life or a woman, if that's your thing, empty out, you know, create a bedside table, empty it out, create the space in the closet, like create a life that allows for it. You need to do those things. You need to slow down a little bit, get intentional about it. All of that, super, super important. But the thing that really shifted for me was once I made manifest, right? Once I manifested this amazing relationship, it then demanded something more of me. And that was a real lesson for me and a learning for me that like the relationship demanded that I show up differently in my business, that I set different ground rules for how I worked and my energy around it and what I allowed space for and how much transition I had into the end of my day and what did I do between calls and like all of these things were and also what my service offerings were. You know, it made a demand on me once that came in. So I think there's something there that you allow for it and then you continue to allow for it, but you won't know what it demands of you until you actually lean in and create it. So the shift continues, right?
Yeah. I love that. Thank you.
Before I ask my final questions, where can people find you?
The best place to find me actually is on my podcast, The Biz Doctor. It's available on all the platforms. I really dive into all things leadership, perspective shifts, productivity, operations, teams. All the common thread being how to get you out from underneath your business so that you can have that true entrepreneurial freedom, fun, impact, take a vacation, and a much needed sigh of relief. And then we have some great resources on our website, goldenkeypartnership.com. I am an elder millennial, so I'm not on TikTok or any of the other cool platforms, but I am on Instagram at it's Lauren Goldstein and LinkedIn.
Fantastic. I love it. So go check her out. And then let me ask you my final questions. What makes you an unstoppable woman?
For me, it's grit, you know, just continuing to grow through the uncomfortableness. It's being, or rather having a growth mindset. And something that I learned actually in the book, Thinking in Bets, detaching my decisions from the outcome so that I don't have the result label it a good decision or a bad decision. The author calls it resulting. And then story interruption is something that has definitely helped me to be unstoppable.
Well, let's dive into those last two. Those are really good. So when you say divesting the decision from the outcome, why is that important?
So the author of Thinking in Bets talks about this term called resulting. And that is where we correlate the decision as good or bad based on the outcome. And the reason why this is somewhat dangerous is because we make a decision in the moment with the information that we have. And so much that comes after that decision is luck that we can't control. And so if we are suddenly saying, I made this decision, but it had, let's say, a bad outcome, and so now we label that as a bad decision, then we undermine our abilities to make more decisions. And it actually stops us from making decisions because we get nervous about the decisions that we're making versus saying, I made this choice. It didn't have the desired outcome. How can I either make a better choice next time with hindsight, which is also really interesting because, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20. And so there's a hindsight bias where we sometimes think, and myself included, where I'm like, oh, I obviously would have made a different decision because I know this. But again, we didn't have the information. So celebrate the decisiveness. And if the outcome isn't what you want, then, you know, we do or I do a postmortem of what happened, why did it happen, how can I make sure it doesn't happen again by learning from it.
I think this is really important. So I want to add a little color and flourish here. So one thing that I know from my experience is that the universe, I mean, this is getting into the woo a little bit, but the universe has an order to it. And we might not be able to see the order from the level of awareness that we're at right now. So we make a decision hoping to get this outcome. We don't get this outcome. We can either make ourselves wrong and bad and like go into to retreat or constraint, or we can do the debrief that you are mentioning, which is super, super important, and understand that there is a greater order that we might not be able to see from the level of awareness that we have now, but in 3 months, in 6 months, in 2 years, in 3 years, in 5 years, we're going to look back and go, oh, that's why that happened. Mm-hmm. And that's so, so important to understand. And then the second piece that I want to add to what you're saying is this 2020 hindsight thing and the debrief. This is how we actually learn how to trust ourselves, that if we can then go, oh, I felt this in that moment, and that feeling was really a no, or some version of a shift, or a little, I needed to ask a different question, or that was a red flag or a yellow flag, or some data point. If we go back and debrief, then we can triangulate that data point to how it feels in our body, that embodiment, and we can take that forward into the next decision. And it's so powerful. That process is so powerful. Okay, now let's talk about story interruption. I have theories about what you mean by that, but please tell me what you mean by that.
So I had a mentor, in case you're not hearing a theme of my mentors, who once told me, and I knew this because my degree is in cognitive neuroscience, your brain can actually tell the difference between something that's happening in quote unquote reality versus something that you have imagined. And so he said, listen, we're making it up anyway. Why not make up a story that actually serves you? Because the truth is, the story that you're telling yourself is either serving you or it's sabotaging you. And so if the only moment in time that we can actually manipulate time or do anything is the present, we're focusing on the stories of the past, you know, that's regret, et cetera, focusing on the future, that's a little bit of fear and excitement. And either way, you're just not present. And so if something has happened and now you're telling a story about what that event means, that is not an empowering story, then you get to shift that story. And the time limit is 5 minutes, which sometimes, you know, I'm like, listen, I know this is not supportive, but I just need to wallow for a little bit and tomorrow will be a better day. But then, you know, really shifting and saying, how can I make this an empowering story? And that, to me, reminding myself to be present and that the only conversation that matters is the one that's happening right now, and shifting.
And it's not just the conversation coming out of your mouth. It's the conversation in your head, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's definitely that internal story, because it's very easy. And at least I'm not sure if this resonates with anyone else, but so many of the things that I saw in childhood created an automatic response in me where the first place I go when something doesn't go right is self-blame. And so those stories are never very supportive. And so it's been a constant, conscious strategy to say, okay, that's not a supportive story. How can we shift this into something that is actually going to be empowering? Because if you stay in that disempowering, you know, self-beat up story, that just that lowers your energy, breaks confidence, all the, shall we say, negative things that are going to keep you stuck.
I love it. So good. Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for your stories, the empowering ones, and
you're
for
welcome.
Sharing your spirit and your intelligence and the strategies that you've taken to really grow yourself and grow your business. So I really appreciate the transparency and the stories. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It was a delight. And I can't wait for your episode on my podcast to be live too.
So that is a wrap for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us on the Unstoppable Woman podcast, where we help ambitious women really have an exquisite life and grow their capacity for so much more. Please join us and our community by subscribing to this podcast and liking and commenting wherever you see this podcast. And we will see you in the next episode. I'm Amira Alvarez, and thank you for listening.
Most ambitious women I work with already have good lives, possibly even great. But there's often this one area that is fine as is, but not yet exquisite. And yet, when we unlock that one area, they access a whole new level. I want to personally invite you to book a complimentary call with me and discover what that unlock could do for you. These calls are for women who have done at least a million or more in their business or executive career and are ready for an exquisite life inside and out. You can book our conversation at theunstoppablewoman.com/connect.